This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Kev, for everybody who's listening who doesn't know, I've never actually heard you like really break this down. Tell us what Moonbirds is.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially our way to, when we started the Proof Collective, which was this 1,000-member little private Discord community of like hardcore NFT collectors, we didn't have a PFP. And so ours was a card, like a picture of a card. Like no one wants to like change their Twitter profile to a picture of a card. So we thought, you know, let's just create something fun. We like the idea of these birds being all seeing, all knowing, just kind of a collection of owls is actually called a parliament. And so we have this idea of this like little secret society that we have that is at the intersection of kind of art and culture. So we wanted to create a private Discord for that. And we launched the Moonbirds project, you know, classic, a tip of the hat to the CryptoPunks doing 10,000 of them. And yeah, it just went gangbusters. I've always said this many times over, the first person I heard talking about utility in NFT was you, Gary, and mentioning, you know, how you were going to start tying some of the stuff you were doing in real world events and all that stuff to your initial drop of vFriends. I think it was a very insightful moment. And it's certainly a model that, you know, we do as well, where we tie utility and both online and offline utility to the NFTs that we offer to out to all the collectors.
Okay, Lish, any questions?
Yeah, the utility topic, it's almost, I've noticed you've become kind of synonymous with this movement, each of you really, but the latest podcast since Moonbirds, I'm seeing more and more, you know, Kevin associated with kind of future of NFT utility and what's next. What are some of the main points that you see when you look next year or two in the future, like how the space evolves with utility?
Yeah, I mean, I think that one of the very important things to hear to remember is how early we are in the terms of all things NFTs and how few people are actually into it. So, yeah. You know, if you add up the top 10 projects out there, we're talking like in the hundreds of thousands of, maybe 100,000 unique actual collectors of these. So we're just now beginning, and the tooling is still really difficult in terms of people being able to onboard and get into these things and figure out MetaMask. And I mean, I remember Gary putting out like videos on how to use MetaMask back before you launched vFriends. You're like, this is how you get your first crypto, yeah. You know, because you had to do the education and you still do.
You should have seen her. He was a mess.
I just couldn't figure it out.
Here it comes.
So, you know, when I think of the utility as it applies to what we're doing, a lot of it has to be with bringing a lot of what we built in Web 2 on the social side and applying it to Web 3, making this more about real deeper connections and the ways that people can get together both online and off. And share this experience and appreciation. Like we've always been more on the art side of things, what we've done with the Proof Collective. So it's about the appreciation of art and not about talking about flipping or floor price or any of that stuff. And so what you see like today, for example, we announced that all of our, there's a very famous kind of skeleton type artist out there that is like this kind of glitchy kind of skeleton type vibe who actually had in our earlier project collaboration we did called Grails. He announced that he was doing an airdrop to all of our skeleton attribute Moonbirds. And so that's an example of working with an existing well-known artist to do additional. His name is What Is Real. Mm-hmm. And he basically did a drop to all of our skeleton Moonbirds. It's an example of how we're leveraging our connections. You have a skeleton. Yeah, that's right. You did.
I have a skeleton gremlin.
Yeah. So yeah, you got some good stuff coming.
Winning.
Yeah. That's going to be awesome. But
I'm doing a utility too, which is I'm punching every candid clownfish holder in the face.
Kevin, I have a.
And some people candid, love that.
That's true. Some people do, but you can't judge that. I have a candid clownfish diamond, which I'm really proud of. I know you're impressed. And the V2 of the candid clownfish diamond is Gary's way of saying F you, Herm. He made the candid clownfish just this like, I mean, it kind of looks like me. Just this like fat dude.
No, it's not true.
Look at that bod of this guy.
That's look a very really cute guy. Look at those eyes.
It's not very
emo. Yeah.
It's pleasantly plump is what you call that, I believe.
Yes, yeah. I the clownfish looks full.
Yeah. Full. I mean, he's definitely been eating well. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Back to this.
Kev, one thing that I think is really interesting. So I've been spending a ton of time on utility in the real world. Beacon is obviously 8 days away. from the recording of this. Thank you again for coming. I can't wait to fucking hang with you.
Be fun.
And a lot of what I'm planning for Q3, 4 is physical utility. And mm-hmm. one of the things that excites me is I think I'm really strong at that and I'm gonna do my thing. One of the things that excites me about you is digital utility. Now, I think one thing that people have to be very careful of, my favorite thing going on right now is all these NFT maxis, which I'm one of, have been pushing on the government because they're also cryptocurrency maxis, which I'm less of because I don't understand finance as well. And I actually think one of the reasons the coins are struggling today, even more so than the NFTs, is the NFTs have a secondary level of collectability and identity that makes people hold it. Whereas a coin is like, what are you really, like, it's just all math. And so these coins can go from 34 bucks to 5 cents quicker, I think, than things that people have emotional attachment visually to something. And I think it's already playing out the way I saw it this week. One thing that I'm very excited about is that I think your digital utility capabilities, because I view you more of a technologist. I think we overlap 80% and then kind of go 20 on each side. And your 20, I think, is more digital strength than I have. And sure. I've always felt that in our relationship where we cross over a lot on, I think a lot of people are going to make the mistake of overpopulating in NFTs as the digital utility. And so they make fun of the government in printing more money when that's exactly what they're all doing right now. And I'm laughing about it. I think yours will be more clever around staking and many other things that I think are possible. I've been thinking through them. So I definitely know you've been thinking through them.
Yeah.
Any previews of digital utility above and beyond nesting, aka staking, or if you can't speak to it directly, theories or things, or maybe even things you're seeing elsewhere, because I just want to educate the audience.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a couple things. One, you know, the when you think about the health at the end of the day, these PFP projects or any of these NFTs, they're all it all comes down to the health of the underlying community, right? If you have people that believe in what you're building, that are finding value in what you're contributing, what you're launching, then you're in a good spot. You don't need to watch your floor price. You don't need to think about any of that stuff. And so for us, our heads down mission is to facilitate a connection and really actually prevent people from flipping and try to really encourage people to get involved in the community and participate and reward good deeds and participation. So when I think about where this goes, the reason why we built nesting into Moonbirds, which is a way of locking up your bird and prevent it from being sold. And then you get upgrades to your nest over time. The more you've proven that you're actually a long-term holder, is that we want to reward that type of behavior. Now that's counterintuitive because it actually goes against us from a revenue point of view. Correct. If you want just the most amount of money, you want the most flipping possible. The more people that turn over your NFT means that you make those royalties every single time. So, but for us, we think the long-term durability and health of the community is more important than the flipping. And so we're willing to take that trade-off. And so a lot of the tools that we're building on the digital side are going to be around, you know, how we can empower the community to do really very positive things in the digital world and the real world and get rewarded for it. That doesn't have to do with them selling their NFT, but more on, you know, how they're contributing to the ecosystem, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Of course. Herm?
I mean, I agree. I feel like the last like week has been amazing in terms of just people getting so stressed. And to Kevin's point earlier, like we're so early and, you know, it's almost like it's a little disheartening seeing the panic. And I think to your point that you've been making this point publicly, not only on the show, but in general, is just buying crypto and NFTs with money that you're okay losing. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest thing I'm like concerned about seeing is that over the next couple months or year, that there's going to be a lot of people like severely underwater.
Yeah.
In like a dangerous space.
Yeah, I saw the your point on just durability of the community really sticks. I was, you know, OpenSea the other day, and number one traded thing was Azuki. And I'm like, what's going on with Azuki? It must be mooning. Quite the opposite, actually. It was like a flurry of people just dumping them. And I'm like, okay, what's going on here? You know, I'm working during the day. I kind of missed maybe some of the news cycle. And it just shows you how quickly if the confidence in the team kind of erodes what can happen to the community sentiment and then the value of the NFTs, you know? I think it went from something like 30 to 8, just based on the news of, you know, the founder maybe had like some other projects in the past that weren't supported so well and some things like that. And like what really changed, it was just that. It was the confidence in the team, the founder, you know, and it really sticks, you know, in terms of how do you build like a really, you know, sustainable community that has confidence in the leadership and the, I guess, parliament in your case. You know, interesting. So thoughts on
like, well, I think this is this is where I think history and these clips will work really well for Kevin and I. I really do. I'm really proud. My team is gathering all my clips for the last 15 months of do not spend money that you can't afford to lose. 99% of NFTs are going to zero. Like, you know, because I know, you know, what happens during times like this.
And I like to think that you just record both the good and the bad side. And then you're like, okay, grab those ones where I was right and put those out.
The good news is it's actually incredibly consistent, right? Like the macro is good because NFTs in 5 years will be very real and a major technology. And the micro was vulnerable because it's happened every time. I mean, Kev, you know this. This is less documented. In 2005 and 4 and 6, there was like 100,000 social networks. Like it's almost as if Facebook and Twitter with a little bit of MySpace and an even tinier bit of Friendster were the only social networks according to everyone in society. Mm-hmm. Everyone's completely forgot about High Five, Bebo that sold for $850 million to AOL, Blog World, which I remember because it had like a $4 sign up affiliate. Me and AJ had like rap websites that were like driving tons of traffic.
What was the one that you missed out on the Q&A platform? Do you remember that one?
Oh, FormSpring.
FormSpring, dude.
Remember I jumped out the window? Oh my God, every one of my friends, that these great angel investors, me, Kev, Dave Morin, Saka, Belsky, all like the people that did extremely well in their investing theses back then, they all of them, Travis, everybody got into Form. Like we were all investing in the same stuff. Not, at least you saw everything. And not that everybody invested, Tim Ferriss, like not that everyone invested in the same things, but you always, and then out of nowhere, I don't know what happened if like I went to sleep for an hour, but one seemed to emerge as actually like this could be the next big one.
And you loved it too. You loved the idea. You're like,
I loved him. Yeah. Like,
Didn't have any shares.
And I was like the only person not in it. And I was like, what did it form spring? But like, you know, I think that this is what always happens. It wasn't that you should invest in every social network. It was that the best operators, Ev, Jack, Mark Zuckerberg, even David Karp, because he had a really strong creative vision, he emanated out. But they were destined to win and the other ones were not. So the call on NFTs was incredibly easy. NFTs will be here forever and a huge part of life way beyond collectability. But the micro was very easy to say 98% are gonna lose in the same way that I think the 2% that are gonna win are gonna be profound. Mm-hmm. You know, PayPal, eBay, and Amazon, if you bought them in April 2000, you're talking about real money. I'll be honest, and you know this about me, Kev, you invest in the market more than I do. Almost all my portfolio on Wall Street is companies I invested in pre-IPO and I've just decided to hold on to it. Kev, I know because when I first met Kev, he traded Apple stock like crazy. He was so good at it and into it. I was like, oh, that's cool. I don't like stock. But I remember that so vividly of our early friendship. And you would do well. And literally, Kalish, this might be interesting to you. I don't know how you manage, you know, your portfolio. But like, I'm really like actually compelled to look at some of these growth stocks. Like, Google and Amazon, I'm like, these are real, like, I understand, but like in 4 years, they're not gonna be out of business. Mm-hmm. And then some of the other ones that are like Netflix, like has all but told you they're gonna have commercials and that's gonna be like $1 trillion in revenue. Like, so a very interesting time of thinking about, and that's what I'm trying to, and that's why Moonbirds was so interesting to me. Like, can I find operators I believe in who have too much to lose? Like, that's my biggest thing. When people are like, Gary, you're a scam. Like, when people get mad, they're like, Kevin's a full, Gary, you're, I'm like, if these people understood how the blockchain works, which is you can bring value forever if you're good, and how much you have to lose when you have a real reputation, if you're just going to abandon it. Of course, anonymous founders can do it. They're anonymous. But like for me and Kev and anybody else who's not like, if you're this perfect person of a business person that has audience, you're very interesting because celebrities can get away with bullshit. They're just aloof. They're like, I didn't know. My manager made me do it. Anonymous, we see that every day. But there's this small group of people that really kind of like have no choice. Like I was kind of like brushing my teeth the other day. I was like, man, I have no choice but to navigate this properly for the next 40 years. That's a lot of pressure. That's like forever. And so that's what I'm looking for. Thoughts that's on well that, Kev? Yeah.
It's well said. I mean, it is one of these things where I think there's going to be this flight to quality, especially as more anonymous. And don't get me wrong. I know some of these anonymous people, some of them are A-plus people that are just happen to be freaked out because they're just really good engineers and they don't want their family stalked by weirdos. And so they don't want to put their names out there.
Yep.
But then there's some people that are going to come in this and develop some classy looking stuff that just gets rugged and they run away. Right. So I think there will be this flight to quality and an emphasis on knowing a little bit more who's behind the team. You know, some of the stuff that you know, they always talk about in these days in Web3, like VC money is somewhat a little bit tainted. You know, you don't want too much VC. You don't want them having influence on your product. But then again, every once in a while, when I interact with like, let's say some kind of DeFi protocol or something, and I look at the bottom of the screen and I see there's a Coinbase Ventures, there's an Andreessen Horowitz, there's a True Ventures. So there's somebody that's involved in it. That gives me an extra like little vote of confidence
100%.
That somebody knows these anonymous founders and then I'm willing to put some money up here and risk some money with this particular project. So I believe that the builders here that can come in and really execute, I think there's a lot of young talent, bless their hearts, that come in with big ambitious ideas that may not have had the experience actually building a product before. And this doesn't mean they won't pull it off. It just means that their timelines may be completely skewed where they'd say, I'm going to have this out right in a year, year and a half. And it ends up being four, you know? So it's just going to be interesting to watch this all unfold.
Kailash, on that note, because I think you have a lot to bring to this conversation, because we're really trying to teach people things here. You were such an early pioneer in online gambling and, you know, DraftKings is really, you know, and there's no debate. Like there's only one other conversation of like the things that made it. Do you see a lot of parallels to that? I mean, there must've been, I mean, not, I, it's easier said than that. I remember thousands of DraftKings competing to be DraftKings.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, like this must seem very logical to you. Do you see the parallels very clearly? Like, hey, me, Robbins and Paul, we were better operators and more capable than the people that we were competing with. And that's why we won, not because of anything else.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of parallels. You know, anything early stage, especially pre-regulation, always, you know, there's huge shades of gray in terms of like how aggressive or not different operators will lean. In the case of something like gambling, there's even like illegal offshore markets where people are literally no rules, anything right. could end up in some really difficult situations. Like I remember even like starting DraftKings, I would put money on and it would be like, I bought, you know, $2,000 of golf balls. It would show up on my, you know, bank statement, you know? So all this stuff up and down the kind of value chain there was just like, who knows, right? And so then you're trying to bring this industry into like a sort of regulated, safe, you know, consumer-centric place. You're thinking about, you know, everything with good intention, but sometimes it's difficult to always give the premium, like best customer experience and thread all the needles. And so, you know, I've experienced a lot of different cycles, ups and downs with that journey over 10 years, like periods of time when everything is going great. People think like regulated gaming is the greatest thing in the world. Then they think like your company sucks more than any company in the world. Like then you're the greatest again. You know, the amount of cycles that we've been through, various controversies, various things.
Kevin, going through cycles, I'm sorry to interrupt, Kailash, such a monumental Moonbirds, like just iconic launch, very close to when there's this correction or bear market, we're about to find out what it all is. Was that an extreme high and low? Like you're the greatest entrepreneur of all time. And of course it's you and like all the, I mean, nothing made me happier than that weekend. And you know this, I was in the storm of launching VF2, that, yeah. But I'm getting, because everyone knows what I feel about you, like legit emails from legit men and women, business people of like, damn, you're right about this guy, or like good for him, or like Lazaro, Carly, like good people just like hitting me like, yo, Kev, huh? And I'm like, of course, like trying to get fucking VF2 off the ground, but I'm like, yeah, I told you. And like, I didn't even like, I'm still kind of pissed at myself. Like I really should have like bought more because I knew better. I'm happy with what I have, but like, but then very quickly, because of the macro, not because of anything in your micro, similar to me, by the way, sold VFriends 1 a year. Oh, by the way, today's the 1 year anniversary of VF1.
Oh, congrats, man. That's awesome.
4,500 all-time high for ETH when I sell. Go to my parents for the weekend to celebrate. By Monday morning, ETH collapses and I'm underwater. It's 1,700 by June after being 4,500. My tax liability is more than the money I have. Like I went through an 8-week period that was really scary, right?
Yeah, that is insane.
That was very scary. This one's a little bit different in that, well, I actually don't know. I mean, your ETH number was a little bit higher too. I hope you turned a good amount into USD or at least your tax liability. But
yeah,
you know, it's really tough because you win in the micro, but the macro market has this moment and some of the constituents, even just on ETH valuation, a 26 Moonbird is incredible versus a 2.5 Moonbird. But some people bought in at 19, but they might actually be under USD water because ETH has changed. And like, you know this, very quickly you've learned it for sure, even with all your success, people struggle with accountability during times like this. Has that been a little bit of a roller coaster?
You know, it has been tough to watch, especially because so many different people are impacted in different ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like this whole roller coaster has hit people. I have some friends that have been, you know, with this UST collapse and Luna have been completely like devastated the last few days.
Can you guys educate me, you guys, because I'm very undereducated on UST and Luna. Are those both cryptocurrencies, right?
Yeah, just think of the UST as like a stable coin, so a dollar pegged stable coin, but based on an algorithm.
Yeah, I
so,
knew that. I knew of that coin. I know.
Yeah,
of
so it was
it.
One
what
for
happened?
One. If you had one, you had a dollar, and it was supposed to stay that way forever. It dropped below
happened?
Its dollar. It lost its peg because it was based on an algorithm. It wasn't based on real US dollar reserves.
Got it.
So, you know, the ones that are based on real US dollar reserves, whether it be right. USDC or GUSD, yep. Those are all fine.
Right.
So because it's based on the algorithm, the thinking there was that the Luna is actually used to prop it up. So it can be bought and sold and minted and decreased and to maintain that dollar peg.
Got it.
The whole system fell over. And when it broke, it just started to continue to spiral. And I'd have to look at the current price of Luna, but it was like 60 cents or something like that last time.
Versus a dollar?
Yeah.
Versus a dollar. And then Luna itself went from, what was it, like $70 or something down to like $3 now, or it was something crazy.
Right. UST went from a dollar to 60, but Luna went from like 70 to 3.
Yeah.
I don't know that it was 70, but it was down to 3. Yeah. I can't remember what the all-time high was.
I want to say the market cap of Luna went from something like 100 billion to like 1 billion.
Insane.
It was a complete wipeout. It was
so, Kev,
you have friends
that really got smoked, huh?
Yeah, because they had this value proposition, which was kind of like you stake to earn 19% APR.
But why do people not know that, like, if it's that good, that there has to be something of a vulnerability? Like, this concept of, like, we've got it. And like, it's just going to make you 19%. Like then everybody on earth would put their money into that.
Listen, when we were growing up, your parents, you sit with them about money and they're like, put your money in a savings account with compound daily interest. You'll earn whatever, 2%. Then you get a little older and you're like, oh, if I invest in the stock market, I'll make 8% a year, annual return, whatever. People, it seems like, and I don't want to like overly kind of harp on this because I also recognize it's sort of like kick while down situation, and that's just bullshit too. But like, I think some of the marketing around these APRs that are obviously unsustainable is just kind of bullshit. And like, repeatedly, you were seeing it over like 6 months ago too with these like OHM forks with 100,000 millions% APR where you stake and
You know what's so funny? People are like, are NFTs dead? It was a fact. Like, and I was like, is anybody writing, is the stock market a fad? Because like, it's getting annihilated.
Yeah, I think that the general idea is like, if you hear a marketing message that's related to like returns, that obviously doesn't make sense. Like it's a Ponzi scam. Just don't put yourself in that position. And like, if you do, then do it from the mindset that like, you know, it's going to be bad in the end.
So like, here's a stock I love. I'm just looking right now. Here's a stock I love. Let me rephrase. Here's a company I love because I'm in the trenches. Shopify was $16.90 on November 19th. $1,690 a share. It's $318 today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should pick some of that up. You're making me want to go stock shopping.
Kev, this is so weird. I know that I'm doing that to you because in my life, I'm 46. Never did I want to buy stock on Wall Street. And I'm literally sitting here like, okay, this might be a moment I have to consider because I know that Shopify is a profoundly important company, like for the entire retail e-commerce ecosystem. It's like well run by a good dude. And like this is something like I'd like to get a little more educated than just the common sense. Like I'm so undereducated on Wall Street, which is the same reason I don't buy stock in the same way I don't buy cryptocurrency. The NFT thing's easy for me because it's card collecting, comic books, like IP building, like it's everything that I am. So it's so easy for me to navigate. It's more like startup land. But very interesting time on Wall Street for sure.
Yeah.